now on the main stage of the Munich Security Conference, the Prime Minister of the UK, Rishi Sunak. Prime Minister.
The United Kingdom will always be on the side of freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. And the security of our European continent will always be our overriding priority. Now, there's no greater example of those commitments than our response to the war in Ukraine. Just this year, we became the first country in the world to provide tanks to Ukraine and the first to train pilots and marines. We gave £2.3 billion last year, and we will match or exceed that in 2023. Now, other allies can tell a similar story, and our collective efforts are making a difference. But with every day that passes, Russian forces inflict yet more pain and suffering. Now, the only way to change that is for Ukraine to win. So, we need a military strategy for Ukraine to gain a decisive advantage on the battlefield, to win the war, and a political strategy to win the peace. To win the war, Ukraine needs more artillery, armoured vehicles, and air defence. So now is the moment to double down on our military support. When Putin started this war, he gambled that our resolve would falter. Even now, he is betting that we will lose our nerve. But we proved him wrong then, and we will prove him wrong now. Together, we're delivering as much equipment in the next few months as in the whole of 2022. And together, we must help Ukraine to shield its cities from Russian bombs and Iranian drones. And that's why the United Kingdom will be the first country to provide Ukraine with longer-range weapons. And it's why we're working with our allies to give Ukraine the most advanced air defence systems and build the air force they need to defend their nation. Now, of course, the United Kingdom stands ready to help any country provide planes that Ukraine can use today. But we must also train Ukrainian pilots to use the most advanced jets. And that's exactly what Britain is doing, so that Ukraine has the capability to defend its security for the long term. But to win the peace, we also need to rebuild the international order on which our collective security depends. First, that means upholding international law. The whole world must hold Russia to account. We must see justice through the ICC for their sickening war crimes committed, whether in Bucha, Irpin, Mariupol, or beyond. And Russia must also be held to account for the terrible destruction it has inflicted. We are hosting the Ukraine Recovery Conference in London this June, and we should consider together how to ensure that Russia pays towards that reconstruction. Now, second, the treaties and agreements of the post-Cold War era have failed Ukraine. So we need a new framework for its long-term security. From human rights to reckless nuclear threats, from Georgia to Moldova, Russia has committed violation after violation against countries outside the collective security of NATO. And the international community's response has not been strong enough. As Jens Stoltenberg has said, Ukraine will become a member of NATO. But until that happens, we need to do more to bolster Ukraine's long-term security. We must give them the advanced NATO standard capabilities that they need for the future. And we must demonstrate that we'll remain by their side, willing and able to help them defend their country again and again. Ukraine needs and deserves assurances of that support. So ahead of the NATO summit in Vilnius, we will bring together our friends and allies to begin building those long-term assurances. And our aim should be to forge a new charter in Vilnius to help protect Ukraine from future Russian aggression. Now let me conclude with one final thought. What's at stake in this war is even greater than the security and sovereignty of one nation. It's about the security and sovereignty of every nation. Because Russia's invasion, its abhorrent war crimes and irresponsible nuclear rhetoric are symptomatic of a broader threat to everything we believe in. From the skies over North America to the suffering on the streets of Tehran, some would destabilize the order that has preserved peace and stability for 80 years. They must not prevail, and we need not be daunted. As President Zelensky said when he addressed the UK Parliament last week, we are marching towards the most important victory of our lifetime. It will be a victory over the very idea of war. And we could have no greater purpose than to prove him right. Thank you.
Prime Minister, thank you. Your speech, I thought, was very clear. Basically, Ukraine has to win the war and Russia loses. But you said something I want to pick up on and elaborate. You talk about NATO assurances for Ukraine. What does that mean specifically, and when do you do them? Do you do them while the war is still ongoing? And don't you fear that Russia will say, ultimately, we're right. We don't fight Ukraine, we fight NATO.
Well, very nice to see you. I think, first of all, it's clear that the security guarantees, the architecture that was in place before this war has failed Ukraine. Right? That's just a statement of fact. Ukraine had received assurances when it gave weapons up. Russia has continually violated, whether it's human rights treaties or indeed arms control treaties. So what happened before has not worked. So we should be clear about that. And now our job is to look forward and say, what's the right thing going forward? Now, as I mentioned, Jens Stoltenberg has said, NATO, Ukraine will be a member of NATO. But between now and then, what I think we need to work on are providing Ukraine with the means to win the war right now. And that means very specifically artillery, long-range weapons, armoured vehicles, air defence. That's the most critical thing. What we can also do is make sure that we're training Ukraine on NATO standard equipment. That's what we're doing when it comes to aircraft with their pilots. But I think what we do need to do is think about the future of how we protect Ukraine's security. And we need to have that conversation with our allies and talk about the longer term provision of supporting Ukraine. And that's the conversation that I think we should start having, because the Vilnius summit is a good place to conclude that.
So this year, so the assurances would come this year. I wonder, there has been a lot of debate. You talked about the fighter jets. There has been a lot of debate here about the ammunition, the risk that they may not have enough ammunition, but also the long range missiles. There's concern that perhaps one of the targets would be Crimea. Under your watch as UK Prime Minister, would you approve of long-range missiles that could hit Crimea?
I think the most important thing here to recognise is, it actually starts with NATO. What is NATO is a defensive alliance. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the first thing to recall. What is Ukraine doing? Ukraine is trying to defend itself. Mm-hmm. Right? It is suffering unprovoked aggression. Its territorial integrity, its sovereignty has been violated. Its people are being killed. And it has every right to defend itself. And that's what we should be doing. And that's the support that we collectively in this room are providing. And critically, there are things that Ukraine needs to gain that decisive advantage on the battlefield. That's why the provision of heavy tanks was so important. That's why air defense is absolutely critical. You're right to mention artillery. And longer range weapons also help. Now, those are all the things that will allow Ukraine to defend itself and repel Russian aggression. And indeed, yes, to have a counter-offensive that moves Russia outside of its own country. I think that's entirely reasonable, and we should be fully behind Ukraine in that ambition and want that ambition to succeed.
And for them, the entire country means Crimea, as you know very well. In your speech, there was a lot of bravado in the sense of Ukraine has to win the war and Russia has to be proven wrong. Vladimir Putin has to lose this war. Some would say, and you make it clear, you still believe the UK is a big geopolitical agent. Zelensky obviously went to London. He sees value in the UK, but some here would believe to really be the strong geopolitical agent, you need to solve the pending issues that you have with the EU. I know you probably know this question is coming. There's a frenzy of reports that you do have a deal over the Northern Irish Protocol that could come Monday, potentially. Do you have a deal? Does it come Monday? And I wonder, beyond that,
Does it reflect your wish that you want to have a normal working relationship with your European allies?
So, lots of things in there to unpack. I think that the first thing to say, when it comes to the issue of the Northern Ireland Protocol, there are real issues that need resolving. The way that the protocol has been implemented, it's causing very real challenges for families, for people, for businesses on the ground. Very practical difficulties, and they need to be resolved. But then also there's an issue of the democratic deficit that sits at the heart of the protocol as it's currently constructed. Now, those are the things that we need to resolve. And I'm working very hard together with my ministerial colleagues, foreign secretaries in the audience, Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. You know, we are working very closely together. We're engaging in those conversations with the European Union.
Next week, potentially?
All the time, and we have been for a while. But what I'd say is there is still work to do. I think there is still work to do. There are still challenges to work through. We have not resolved all these issues. No, there isn't a deal that has been done. There is an understanding of what needs to be done. It's the issues that I outlined, and James was in Brussels yesterday. I've been in Northern Ireland talking to parties there about the things that we need to fix. We're working through those. We're working through them hard, and we will work through them intensely with the EU. But we are by no means done. There is no deal that is done. There's work to do, and that's what we will set about doing.
So I guess you basically say on Monday that's not a deadline in any way in your view. But I wonder, on a bigger picture, is there a wish to now have a normal working relationship with your European allies? Is this a war that's happening in continental Europe?
Yeah, look, of course there is. I know, the UK may have left the European Union. It didn't leave Europe. Mm-hmm. We are a European nation. I talked in my speech about our commitment to European security. And look, of course we want to have a positive, constructive relationship with our European partners, neighbours, allies, individually, but also with the EU. And I think you can see that. You can see it most importantly in the response to Ukraine, but very specifically actually on sanctions, where there has been exceptionally good close working and coordination between the UK and the EU on designing and implementing sanctions packages, which only work effectively when they're done well in a coordinated fashion. I think we've demonstrated that we can do that together. But if I look at a couple of other areas where we're having good conversations as a result of the positive dialogue. One is illegal migration. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Calais group of countries that is working together to tackle illegal migration met at the end of last year. That's a group of countries that involves the UK. Very productive set of discussions that were had. It's a sign of good dialogue, good cooperation. And then lastly, on energy security. Mm-hmm. I think all of us in Europe over the last year have re-examined where we're getting our energy from. And ultimately, that is a shared goal, and one in which we work in together. We have an interconnected electricity market. How can we not work together on that? And those are some of the very real practical things that we are currently engaged on. And that's, I think, that's a sign of progress and is a welcome and positive development.
And perhaps a new tone, and you did come with a very big delegation, which has not been the case at times.
I'm told that, James will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm told that this is the biggest delegation that we've had.
And it reflects a new change in tone.
Absolutely. And I think there's this idea that was put to me earlier by someone that somehow just because we left the EU, should be interpreted as the EU or the UK turning in on itself. Nothing could be further from the truth, right? Like the UK has always been an outward-looking country, and we are committed to continuing and doubling down on that. And I think, funnily enough, I think it was relatively recently, one of our brand new aircraft carriers, which we're very proud of, went around the world and participated in joint missions with almost every navy along the way, from Europe to the Middle East to Asia. And it was an incredible sign, I think, of the UK's desire to be an outward-looking nation. How could anyone say, with something like that going on, that we were somehow retreating? No, of course not. That's our aircraft carrier out in the Indo-Pacific in partnership with other countries in the region, talking about regional security with them. You know, we're currently in the process of negotiating UK accession to the CPTPP. So I think these are all quite tangible demonstrations of our desire to be engaged, of course, in Europe, but also around the world, whether it comes to trade, security, energy policy, you name it.
And let's see what the audience thinks, because now it's time to take a question from the audience. Oh, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I would like to commend United Kingdom and you, obviously, for the leadership in providing the arms. I, as an officer of Ukrainian Army, benefited from UK weapons provided first day of the war. It saved my life and saved life of many of my friends in the army. Now is a question. We hear more and more, including in this conference, that the depletion of stocks became a reason or excuse not to provide more weapons to Ukraine. Interesting phenomenon that the countries which are bordering or closer to Russia and facing the risk more than others, they're actually first one to provide weapons to Ukraine. It's not that they have more higher stocks. No, they just feel the risk and understand that they reduce this risk by supplying weapons to Ukraine. I would like to understand, can you spell out the logic why UK is demonstrating leadership? What is logic behind your pragmatic logic and how to make sure that others which are fall behind also adhere to the same speed that is demonstrated by United Kingdom? Thank you.
Well, first of all, sir, can I just say thank you to you and your colleagues for the bravery that you've shown in defending your country. It's been an inspiration to us all. And thank you for your kind words about the UK. Now, my pitch to everyone would be simple. I think we're at an inflection point in the conflict whereby if we collectively, as the UK has tried to lead in doing, step up our support to Ukraine at this moment, right, with armoured vehicles, with longer range weapons, with air defence, with artillery, Ukraine will have the ability to gain a decisive advantage on the battlefield. Right? It can't just be about defending. We've got to be able to provide Ukraine with the means to fight back. And that's why I think now is critical. And I talked about it in my speech. We're providing more arms in the next 3 months than we've done in an entire year because time is of the essence. And there is a moment in this conflict where we can make a difference and help Ukraine win. And that would be my pitch to everyone and everyone that I speak to is do what we are doing, join the countries that are providing that support, intensifying it and accelerating it now, because that is how we can try and bring this conflict to an end on terms that are favourable for Ukraine to ensure that Ukraine wins. That was my very simple pitch. I think the alternative is far worse. So that's what we clearly should do. We all are united in wanting Ukraine to win. And if there's an opportunity to do that sooner and take advantage of the moment we had, why would we not seize it? What are we waiting for? Would be my pitch. So now's the moment to act. Now, with regard to stockpiles, I think, the pitch I would make to people is to remember, what do we have those stockpiles for? Right? If you're a European nation and you have this equipment, you have to ask yourself, what was it there to defend against? Right? What was it there to do? And if one of those stockpiles is now helping to degrade a Russian tank, well, isn't that precisely what it would have been used for? You had it in your stockpile for. So I don't think you should necessarily see every bit of depletion of stockpiles as somehow a negative that is a problem. It's actually, well, hang on, that's what the purpose of these things were. So our security, even as the stockpiles might be depleted, if they're degrading Russian armed forces, they are increasing our security at the same way. So that's one way to think a little bit about the stockpiles. But it's right that we do need to replenish them in the UK. We've provided extra funding for our armed forces to ensure that they do have the certainty that those stockpiles will be replenished, because our own security in that sense is important. And one of my colleagues in front of you will hold my feet to the fire on that particular question. But that's what we are doing. And I think, actually, again, working together with European partners and more broadly around the world, ensuring that the supply chains can ramp up to the degree that we need them to is an important thing for us to do together. And I think as we've been doing that, one thing we've discovered is the interoperability of all our pieces of kit is probably not as strong as it should be and could be. And that is a lesson for us to take away and improve going forward.
Prime Minister, you have multiple questions, but right, I see
I'm
gentleman
quick,
at the back.
Quick answers.
Well, let's
thank you very much, Artur Gerasimov, Ukrainian Parliament MP, European Solidarity Faction. First of all, from all Ukrainian people, I want to say thank you for your country's support, for supporting Ukraine and for your leadership. But now the key issue is time and speed of decision-making process, and UK showed the brilliant examples in this speed of decision-making. And the question is simple from one point of view, but maybe complicated from the other. Which steps, from your point of view, can be done with purpose drastically increase the speed of decision-making of all NATO members while supporting Ukraine and while sanctioning Russia?
Well, do you want to take another question, or do you want me to...
One final one, and then we'll put them together. Yes.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Thank you for impeccable leadership and your attitude, constant attitude on the leadership. Pavel Popescu from Romanian Parliament. I want to ask you specifically on the Black Sea region. The U.S. Congress passed partial legislation which will focus on that region. How important do you think is to have a Black Sea security strategy in the following months in order to insulate that area and countries like Moldova, considering the fact that we defend the longest border, NATO border, with Ukraine and the other
Prime Minister, there's just a very final question I want to also take, and then we combine them.
Oleksiy Goncharenko, member Ukrainian Parliament. First of all, that's my question. You know, it's F-16, and my question is when the training of our pilots will start. They said hello to you. They have a special gift for you I will give you after. But we just say us when they will start, because that is the prayer of Ukrainians today. Thank you.
Okay, perfect.
Fighter jets, Moldova, Romania.
Right. Well, look, in terms of the Baltic, I think, look, one of the most pressing, look, obviously the situation in Moldova is we're all aware of. I think actually one of the other things that has come to light about the Baltic and the sea is the... was about the provision of food supplies. And I think that was something that was very acute earlier later last year. And, you know, part of the awful tragedy of this conflict and what Russia is doing is the food inflation that is causing and the impact that's having on some of the poorest people in the world. And I think part of, actually, collectively, one thing we needed to do a better job of explaining that to the countries affected, that the reason food prices are going up, that grain isn't available, is not because of Western sanctions, it's because Russia is bombarding grain fields, grain stores, and not letting things pass. So I think it's been a great sign of international cooperation led by the UN. Turkey's played an important role in ensuring that the Black Sea Grain Initiative has been successful. Again, we have another date in March where that needs to be renewed. We should collectively focus our efforts on renewing it to ensure that the provision of grain to countries that need it continues to flow. And it's something that, you know, President Zelensky is very committed to. He actually, in spite of the fact that he's busy defending his country, he also wants to make sure that Ukraine is continuing to provide food to some of the poorest people in the world, and that's enormously to his credit, and we need to help him do that. Look, on timing, I kind of just reiterate the point I made before. I think we're at an inflection point. We have a moment. And for everyone who says we want Ukraine to win and Russia must fail, if you believe that, then you must act now. Because now is the moment to accelerate and increase the supplies of, as I said, those four key things: longer-range missile weapons, artillery, armoured vehicles, air defence. Those are the critical needs, and we need them now, and that's how we're going to turn this thing around and ensure Ukraine does win. And look, on fighter jets and provision, that's what we've announced doing. We're starting to train Ukrainian pilots on both NATO standard aircraft, but also in tactics. I think that's important. And that, when we talk about the long-term way to increase Ukraine's security, that's what we've started doing, and I think others will follow in time. Look, with jets, everyone knows that there are complications in the provision of particular types of aircraft, because everything that comes alongside that. But what we've said very clearly is where other countries are able to provide aircraft immediately, the United Kingdom will happily support them in doing that. And that's something that I'm very clear about. And I'll end on this note. Talked about President Zelensky and I and the gift. There was a picture, I think, of the President and I when he visited the UK, where we were being flown somewhere in one of our RAF aircraft with our helmets and whatnot, and someone had posted it with the caption that said, "The next Top Gun movie looks a bit crap." But his message was well made, and we'll be there to support you.
Prime Minister, your team says you have to go, but I cannot let you go without asking you this question. Just an hour ago, Wang Yi, the top Chinese diplomat, was here, and he said, China has a plan and will present a plan to bring peace, potentially, to Ukraine. Do you believe China can be a mediator in this war?
Well, look,
China
has to play a responsible role when it comes to situations like this, and that's what I would urge and ask them to do. And obviously, you know, Chancellor Scholz, Olaf, had a conversation with them about nuclear rhetoric last year, which was important that we de-escalated that. It was unacceptable use of nuclear rhetoric from Russia. that thankfully has now dampened down. But look, when it comes to China more broadly, I've been very clear. China represents a systemic challenge to our values and our interests. We in the UK are very alive to that and will take the steps needed to protect ourselves against that, whether it's with the power to block hostile investment. Recently we did that. Whether it's standing up for abuses in Hong Kong or Xinjiang, we will do what's necessary to protect ourselves and engage with China on trying to resolve some of these pressing problems where we can.
And I guess your messages do not help Russia in this war. And anyway, those companies, there will be sanctions if they do.
And that's whether it's on Belarus and elsewhere, we've been very clear that Russia should be completely isolated in the global community.
Well, Prime Minister, thank you so much for your time here at the Munich Security Conference.
Thank you very much. Thank you.